diabetes to your skin flaps, ulcerations. So hopefully this will just be an augment then of the prior lectures that were done. I also want to thank the Institute for allowing me to come. This is the second time. I was here 2 years ago. I believe it was the first Diabetic Foot Conference, and it was a wonderful opportunity. There was a great turnout, and there were a lot of good questions. I think a lot of people benefited greatly from that. All right, so this is soft tissue debridement and bone biopsy, but I'll limit it to debridement. So, which are pretty much the same thing. I mean, any dead. What's the reason why we do debridement on wounds? So, purpose of debridement would be removal of the devitalized tissue. That's dead, necrotic tissue. Anything that's non-viable. Thank you. And then the other question is, when we debride, it's not a question, it's a statement, but then we'll get to a question. The statement is we're changing a chronic wound into an acute wound through debridement. So these are one of the two most important. So there's probably four or five steps that I would include on that, and we're going to get back into that as well. So healing a wound expeditiously and fast certainly has its advantages. When you leave a wound around for several months, and you've seen them several years even, this leads to a higher chance of infection, osteomyelitis, soft tissue infection, or bone infection. And then, of course, the return to activity and employment. So, all right, so why do wounds, what makes them become chronic versus those that are acute? And you've all seen the wounds that you've debrided, you've offloaded, you've done the appropriate things, and they heal up in the appropriate time. They're 15% better each time you see them, hopefully once a week. At least that's our standard at our wound care center. That's the goal. You want to get for 15% improvement or reduction in size every week that you see them. And that's where most wounds fall. However, there's a subset out there that do not respond. You debride them, you offload them, you see them back, and their wound is just as big, maybe a millimeter or so smaller. And, of course, what does the physician say when they come in? Great-looking wound, you're doing wonderful. But if you really take a picture of that wound, which should be done every... In my private practice, it's not done. However, at the wound center, where I also work, it's done religiously. And it's really nice to see, is this thing really getting smaller? I mean, you've been debriding it week after week after week. You've been trying to offload it. Is this thing getting smaller? And measurements and pictures are your key to letting you know about this. So here's just a little bit of reason why, or theories as to why some wounds may turn from acute to chronic. All right, this is what we discussed earlier. And I'm going to discuss these basic concepts here, which we're going to allude to. Now, you're going to see a lot of the same wounds throughout this presentation. We're going to go over and over again, and you're going to see a lot of the modality which you attack a wound. And hopefully this will become ingrained in your head. It amazes me how many physicians out there just, they see wounds, well, the wounds come into their clinic. These are usually primary care physicians, but can be any specialty, and they just choose to have a blind eye. They'll keep the dressing on. They'll order home nursing. This is in my state anyway. They'll order home nursing. Home nursing will come by. They'll do dressing changes. They really don't do debridement because they're not allowed in our state to do significant debridement, but they can put, you know, the different dressings on. And the physician just is not seeing the wound, nor debriding it, and that's crucial. All right, so common treatment interventions for healing. These are the important things that I think every, and this was alluded to earlier on a previous lecture, what needs to be done with each patient and each wound that comes into your office. So medical management, obviously they need their overall medicine and health under control and observed by, you know, one person that can kind of run the ship. And then aside from that, they'll have all the other people that was also alluded to. See, again, I said this, my lecture isn't the lecture, it's just an augmentation of the other lectures that have been done. So, now, management of vascular, this was also alluded to earlier. If there's no blood flow, you cannot heal a wound. That's the priority. You need the blood flow. Once they have the blood flow, then it's just up to you to make sure those other things are done, offloading, edema control, and we'll get into those as well. All right, so management of infection. If there's an infection anywhere there as well, that will also impede greatly on your wound healing. So after circulation and infection, actually those two kind of go hand in hand. I would almost put circulation above. So, and debridement, and that's why they're seeing you, you know, in our clinic, in my office. They see us once a week. They get aggressive debridement every week. They get proper offloading every week. Measurements, pictures, and we actually have these diagrams that show the size of their wound, when they've had debridement, and when they've had anything else added to it, like a apligraf, one of these skin substitutes, which there are out there, they're certainly not needle wounds will heal with just a simple offloading and wound debridements, as you've seen here. But there's a subset as well that do require an additional, where you need to step it up and add something else to these wounds. There just isn't the capacity in that tissue to heal that wound. Pressure relief. A lot of the wounds we see, they're diabetic, neuropathic wounds. A lot of the patients blame their wounds and their wound healing due to the diabetes, and they're in part true. However, it's the neuropathy is the main culprit. Now, yes, they are right in that these other things are impeding their wound healing. But neuropathy, as was alluded to earlier, is the key. That's the whole reason why they're in your office, and that's the whole reason why they have that big hole staring at you in the bottom of their foot. And we saw pictures of how you can offload. By the way, that picture of the wheelchair, the wooden wheelchair, that came out of the Texas Diabetic Institute. So it's fascinating, and it's still there. And surgical management. You know, once all these above things are done, then you can go in and you actually clean that up, remove some of that dead non-viable tissue, and that's where we turn the chronic wound into the acute wound by removing all that devitalized tissue. We'll get into that as well. All right, so before you take your knife to that skin and start whacking away. And I like the term, if it's not red, it's what? Dead. That's a good term. And it's actually very true. Anything that's not red really needs to get taken out of that wound. And again, in serial debridements. This isn't done at once in one cavalier office visit. You take as much soft tissue as allowable. You let it bleed, you maintain the bleeding through hemostasis, and then you'll see him back in a week and you'll read a little more. Each time you'll notice there's less dead or anything other than red, and you'll notice there's more red. All right, so edema control, offloading and circulation, I would say these are the most important. Although there's several others. I mean, glucose control, you know, if their sugars are running 300, 400, 500, 600, you've seen them all. The A1Cs of 11. All right, so let's go circulation first. My initial visit, when a patient comes in, I do just a simple palpable pulse, dorsalis pedis, and I'm going to focus on foot wounds because since I'm a podiatrist, that's all I see all day. So, dorsalis pedis and posterior tib. And if you can palpate these, I don't think there's any need for any further studies. If they're non-palpable, at our hospital, most floors have a Doppler, and it's surprising how many times you can get non-palpable pulses, but you can get a strong biphasic Doppler. And if you get that, they're good to go. Then I don't worry too much about cutting away the dead tissue. All right, so let's say you've palpated the pulses. Nothing. You've put a Doppler up on there, and nothing, or very faint. Then what's the next step? Next step for me is I would order an arterial study. This includes, this has, again, a Doppler, which will be done. And these are techs who do Dopplers all day. Sometimes, well, I would say not in our case, but sometimes they actually are able to get Dopplers that you didn't get priorly. There are also other studies. They can do an ABI, ankle brachial index, toe pressures, waveforms. This is significant information on letting you know how well or not that blood is coming down. Remember, you can heal a wound, but you need the blood flow. If there's no blood flow, you are not going to heal that wound. In fact, you could do a lot more damage by taking a blade to that skin. Alright, so how do you tell circulation just from observing the patient when they come in? You see this wound staring you at in the face. You know, we talked about the palpable pulses. There is capillary refill time, that CRT up there. You know, just push on the toe or near the wound, let it get white, then pull it away and see if redness comes in. If it's under 3 seconds and you're getting good capillary filling time, you know, that blood flow is coming from somewhere. All right. Maybe poor, but at least they're getting something. If you push on that, you take your finger off and it's white, and then it starts to change hue in white, but it's still white, and after 4 or 5 seconds, it's still white. They need vascular surgery workup. They need something else. Something's blocking their flow. And another one, it's not too set in stone, but digital hair. There's several patients out there that don't have digital hair, and they have good blood flow. But those that do not have good blood flow will not have digital hair. All right, next one is edema. Edema can really impede your wounds and the wound healing. How is that? Number one, it adds extra pressure on that wound. If you'll notice that, which was talked about earlier, the negative pressure wound therapy or wound vac, which is also used quite a bit here, the negative pressure wound therapy causes a vacuum. And if this is our wound, it draws all that pressure in, creating a vacuum, and it's pulling anything fluid, it's pulling that out. Drawing the cells closer together. It's doing the opposite that edema would do. Edema, it's just a free flow. That fluid comes down, it expands the tissues, adds extracellular fluid blood flow has a more difficult time getting to the wound, and therefore makes it more difficult to heal. All right, next case, and I believe this is the last one, offloading. And there was a great, you brought up a great presentation of that slideshow, or the graph which had the different types of modalities, TCC being the greatest, taking the most pressure off the forefoot, and of course in your diabetic foot wounds, that's the most common area. Now yes, you get them in the heels and also in the midfoot, but the forefoot is the most common. And of course that's where you're getting the most pressure taken off. And then if we go to the other end of the scale, so total contact cast being number one, and we'll show some pictures on putting a TCC on, and that was already done as well. That was a good presentation on applying a total contact cast. If you've never seen one put on, they're very different than just, say, a typical cast. So Armstrong did that study on removable CAMBU. Now, that was the next best on the total contact cast as far as offloading. But what he did was he also put a monitor on their thigh, and then he put a monitor in the boot. Now, the patient didn't know about the monitor in the boot because it was hidden back behind the heel, but the patient did know about the monitor on the thigh. The reason for the two monitors was every time the patient walked or had activity, the monitor would, it would activate the monitor. Then when he compared these two, he asked the patient, have you been wearing your removable CAMBU? And it is removable, so they can take it off anytime they want, even though they were instructed all the time. There's a huge variation. Now, these are patients who think they're very compliant, they're doing what they should, they're wearing their removable CAMBU, they're not taking it off. So if that's the case, why is there this huge discrepancy? So somewhere at home, or when they're out of the clinic, they're taking their boot off. And you can see the scenario. You know, if this was your boot, you go home, you take the boot off because you're just relaxing, watching TV. You're not putting any weight on this foot anyway, so the boot doesn't need to be on there. It's just there for weight-bearing protection. The phone rings. You have to go up and get it. You have to go to the bathroom. Oh, there's something in the kitchen you need to go eat. That actually adds up to quite a bit of weight-bearing, and it looks like this is what turned out to be why there was such a huge discrepancy as to why the patients were wearing the boot and when not. Then besides removable CAMBU, the next thing would be a surgical shoe. Darko's here. They have a great, in fact it's called a Darko shoe. And that's got some modifications to the surgical shoe, so it's actually a little better for offloading. And then the next would be tennis shoe, which is probably the worst way to offload an ulceration. Until just a couple weeks ago, where I found out the worst was barefoot. I had a 29-year-old female come in. She had a diabetic foot ulceration on the sub-MTPJ of the second metatarsal head. Again, very common area. So I placed her in a removable CAMBU. I saw her for 4 weeks. And going back to that study on Sheehan, if you don't see 50% reduction in 4 weeks, change your modality. If you don't change, you're going to get the same thing 4 weeks later. If you do change, you'll likely get something different in the wound. So the change was I started adding a skin graft. Actually, it's a skin substitute, applegraft, to her foot. Very expensive. And after two applications, she still was just not getting better. And it was frustrating. I had a student with me, a medical student with me at the time that was rotating, and I was going over it and just, you know, why is this patient not healing her wound? It's a simple wound to heal, but hers is not healing. Well, so we went in, we talked a little more to the patient, we got some information, what are you doing when you get home? I mean, so there's no infection in her foot, or at least it's under control. There is no edema. Offloading, I've given her a boot, so she's offloaded. and she has circulation. So we've covered those things. So given that, a wound should heal. Why is she not healing? So we went back to those basic steps. Well, it turned out after talking to her, she would get home and take the boot off and just walk in her bandage for the rest of the day. Well, how is a wound going to heal if you're getting constant pressure put on it every day? You can actually offload a patient 18 hours a day, or let's say 23 hours a day. And if they walk that 1 hour a day, defeated all that offloading from before. And that's why David Armstrong made that study where the instant total contact cast. All that is, you put somebody in a removable CAM boot, and then you either put plaster of Paris, Coban, you put something on there that the patient can't take off, or if they do take off, you will know they've taken it off. And of course, when a patient cannot take a removable CAM boot off, you get 100% compliance. And that's when you start seeing wound healing. So when this patient wasn't healing after several weeks of a removable CAM boot and Apligraf, which was pretty expensive, and just not healing, I put her in a total contact cast, which is probably what I should have done on the very first visit. But she was young, and I thought I could, you know, compliance would not be an issue. Apparently it was. Within 2 weeks of the total contact cast, she had complete resolution. It had healed. But anyway, so that just stresses the importance of those four things. Edema, offloading, circulation, and I forgot the other one. Okay, yeah. Infection, thank you. But we'll go back to that, and it's going to get grilled in your head just like it almost is in mine here in a little bit. So, all right, so prior to debridement, again, remember, if let's say you have a wound that comes in. When you debride, you are making that wound more, you're making it larger because you're taking a lot of that dead necrotic tissue along with some of the viable tissue. And they're always larger after the first debridement. And then they show a significant decrease each time you see them after that. Let's take circulation, for example. If that patient does not have circulation, and you brought up an interesting study on one of the papers, it was on one of your slides, it suggested a certain percentage of people that had undergone amputation had not had any vascular testing done, which is truly amazing. If you cut away some of that dead necrotic tissue, remove it, if you create a wound, now they already have a wound, you've just made that wound a little larger and you've gotten into that viable tissue. If you make a wound larger, which is not the problem, you now, that foot, or any part of the body where the wound is, but I'm going to refer to the foot, that foot now requires more blood supply to heal the destruction of that wound which you've now created. So if this is a patient that has very little blood supply or almost no blood supply, or it just has barely enough to get along, it's just hanging there, just getting by day to day, it will take blood from its neighbors. So let's say you have a ulceration on the sub-first MTPJ, most common area for a diabetic neuropathic ulceration. It requires more blood now to heal this area, so it's going to go to its neighbors, maybe the second metatarsal, and it's going to pull blood in to help heal that area. So if you take blood from an area that's just barely getting by, let's compare it to food. The whole foot, everybody in the family down there, family meaning first, second, third, fourth digits, first, second, fourth, metatarsals, yeah, you get the idea. They're all eating, but there's hardly any food down there. They just have barely enough to get by. If one of them's starving or for some reason requires extra food, he's going to take it from his neighbor. He takes it from his neighbor. That neighbor is now depleted of or diminished of blood supply. And that's when you see the sequela of it turning dark, dusky. And you've all seen where the hallux has been amputated. You wait 2-3 days, that second toe turns dark, dusky, black, gangrenous. Then it comes off. And then the third toe comes off, and the fourth, so on and so on. So that's what I mean by circulation. So get the circulation under control first before you take that knife or whatever modality. And we're going to discuss that too, whatever modality you take to that patient. All right, so let's talk about infection. Almost every wound that comes into our hospital gets a swab run across it. You know, is that going to, if I swab this wound, will it grow something out? Of course it will. In fact, Stephanie Wu, who was here 2 years ago speaking at the first diabetic foot conference, recently published a paper where they took they swabbed wounds at different days, I think it was every week, on the patients. And every week, those cultures were different. So, back to the question, is this infected? Venous leg ulceration, rather large, and wounds scare people. I mean, they really do. But you're going to be very comfortable after this lecture on wounds. And you'll be much less intimidated when you see your next wound in clinic. So what are the, infection, drainage, warmth, redness, swelling? Yes, we're seeing the swelling. We are seeing a little peri-wound erythema right in this area. But is that cellulitis? Is that infection? Or is that just aggravation from the skin trying to heal from a venous leg ulceration, which this you see in any venous leg ulceration is very common. You see that type of perimeter. And yes, they drain. So they have several of the components of what we know is infection, but this is not an infected wound. All right, now this wound. Is it infected? And again, many people would say yes. In fact, I'm surprised how many people think most of the wounds that come in, if it's a wound, it's infected. It's got to be infected because it's showing just something in there that just doesn't look right. That tissue does not look right. This tissue is actually okay. But it's a bad-looking foot. He's got swelling. Erythema, you can't really tell. Of course, with the color of the skin, erythema is going to be a little more difficult to distinguish. Although there's no warmth to this area. So again, I would say that's not infected, that foot. Now, does it need debridement? Of course it does. We're going to get into that in the next couple of slides. And you're going to see a lot of these same slides within this presentation. All right, so infected or not? Little bit of peri-wound edema. Drainage, yes, drainage, but is serous drainage infection? No. Is a milky white drainage, then yes, it would be. All right, well, I got a note here. We got to fly through these. So, and this isn't too much longer, so we'll get through these things. All right, infected or not? No. No peri-wound erythema, no edema. Again, not infection, okay? Now, if you swab it, you will grow something out of this. So if there's no infection, what do? Now, let's talk about this one. Is this infected? This actually was. This is a surgery that Dr. Ajit Varma was involved in. It's difficult to tell from the presentation, from this, but this is actually very fluctuant right here. There's a lot of pus in there, and we'll see from surgery that the pus actually extends all the way up to just below the knee. You'll see that in a later presentation. TCPO2, transcutaneous oxygen pressures. Very nice on finding where your wound, doesn't say where it'll heal, it'll say where it'll fail. The number you want is 40. 40 and above, that's how much oxygen comes to the surface of the wound. So how is this accomplished? How do you debride a wound? And there's all different modalities to debride wounds. The knife, that's the most common. I prefer a 15 blade, that's my favorite. But I've also used, you know, VersaJet, ultrasound. All right, so this wound, what do you debride? Anything that's not red, as was discussed earlier, if it's not red, or if it's not dead, you know. All right, that wound again, that white tissue, yellow, comes off. Now, this wound, it's all red. This is the typical wound you want to see. Now, this is ready for either healing on its own or a split-thickness skin graft or any of the other modalities you can use on this. So, again, what do you debride? Anything that's not red. That includes the tissue around here, which are the senescent cells, and we'll talk about. That's the same one we talked about earlier. We remove a lot of it. Again, this is non-viable. Non-viable. That redness in the center, viable. That's what you want the whole wound to look like. And you've been debriding this wound week after week. It's just not getting any better. What else needs to be in control? So if we go back to those same things we talked about earlier, infection control, edema, offloading, circulation, and you'll remember this slide, okay? Well, it's the edema. There's some significant amount of edema. Now, there's also edema in this slide as well. If you get the edema under control, the wound will respond much better. Prior to debridement, again, same slide. I'm going to show this over and over. What do? You go back to that same slide we just talked about a little earlier on infection control, and you can do this over and over and over again, okay? If you have a wound, I mean, this doesn't mean that down the road and then a wound you had initially didn't present with this stuff can present later. This is what, after debridement, this is what you want the wound to look like. Remember, it's red, whereas the other one has some black necrotic tissue in it. So how's this accomplished? And there's different areas. I'm going to focus on the ultrasound, but you're all familiar with whatever modalities you use. Surgical blade, by far the easiest, I think. There's a VersaJet, high stream, water being pulsed. Very accurate as well. So this is the ultrasound that you're seeing. It's a beveled edge like a cup. Provides ultrasound and a little bit of mist, water as well. Does a phenomenal job as far as disrupting the vasculature, not disrupting, but promoting the vasculature around the wound to help heal that area. This shows the cup end down, and I'll show another one with the cup side up. This is that nice red tissue you want to see. That has the cup side up. That's allowing just ultrasound just to go down to the tissue. Again, all that dead necrotic tissue on the perimeter, on the periwound erythema, on the margin, that needs to be removed. All right, ultrasound debridement. Now, we're almost done. This is the lady who came into the clinic. She'd been treated at a wound care center for quite some time. As to why she still had this wound after when she came in to see me, I don't know why. It seems like she was getting proper debridement. I didn't get a full history on her, but I just started treating her from scratch. This is a new wound to me. I'm going to treat it just like that. When you dorsiflex and plantar flex that foot, you saw that tibialis anterior muscle, this whole thing, move up and down with the foot. Serial debridement, she had wound back, and then she later went on to split thickness skin graft. Finally healed that wound. This was a gentleman who was, well, we'll discuss that in a different slide. But does anybody know this person here, right here? This was in Iowa. We actually traveled from Detroit to Iowa. watched one of their surgical, all right, so remember this slide. Infection control, edema, offloading, and then circulation. That's why your vascular surgeons are so important as a group. So, thank you. Are there any questions at this point? Sounds good. We're going to hold questions for a later time.